must now be considered suspect, fallacious until proven valid. If you'd been watching the boy, as he thought, you'd have seen a distant, abstract, puzzled frown move across his face, below the glasses and the lightning bolt scar. His hand stayed in the starting position for the Patronus charm, and did not move. The presence of Dementors interferes with the part of you that processes happiness. If you cannot retrieve your happy thought by mnemonic association on the key of happiness, perhaps you can get at the memory some other way instead. When was the last time you talked to someone about the Patronus charm? Harry couldn't seem to remember that either. A crushing wave of despair swept over him, and was dismissed by the logical part of himself as untrustworthy, external. Not Harry. The dull weight still pressed down on him, but his mind went on thinking. It didn't take much effort to think. When was the last time you talked to someone about Dementors? Professor Quirrell had said that he was already able to feel the presence of Dementors, and Harry had said to Professor Quirrell... He'd told Professor Quirrell... to hold to the memory of the stars, of falling bodiless through space, like an occlumency barrier across his entire mind. His second defense class of the year, on Friday. That was when Professor Quirrell had shown him the stars. And again, on Christmas. It didn't take much effort to remember them, the searing points of white against perfect blackness. Harry remembered the great cloudy wash of the Milky Way. Harry remembered the peace. Some of the coldness at the fringes of his limbs seemed to retreat. There were words he had spoken out loud on the day he had first cast the Patronus charm. His mind could remember the sounds and the speech, even as the feelings seemed distant. "I thought of my absolute rejection of death as the natural order." "You cast the true Patronus charm by thinking about the value of human life." "But there are other lives that are still alive to be fought for. Your life, and my life, and Hermione Granger's lives. All the lives of Earth, and all the lives beyond, to be defended and protected." Then, the idea of killing everyone... That hadn't been his true self. That had been the dementation talking. Despair was the dementor's influence. "Where there's life, there's hope. The aura is still alive. Professor Quirrell is still alive. Bellatrix is still alive. I'm still alive. No one's actually died yet." Harry could picture the Earth now, in the midst of the starfield, the blue, white orb. "And I won't let them. Expecto Patronum." The words came out a little halting, and when the human shape burst back into existence, it was dim at first. Moonlight instead of sunlight, white instead of silver. But it strengthened slowly as Harry breathed in deliberate rhythm, recovering, letting the light drive back the darkness from his mind, remembering the things that he had almost forgotten, and channeling them back into the Patronus charm. Even when the light blazed full and silver once more, illuminating the corridor more brightly than the gas lamps, banishing fully the cold, Harry's limbs still shook. That had been too close. Harry took a deep breath. All right. It was time to reconsider the situation now that his thoughts were no longer being artificially darkened by Dementors. Harry reviewed the situation. Still looked pretty hopeless, actually. It wasn't the crushing despair of before, but Harry still felt wobbly, to put it mildly. He still didn't dare go dark, and it was his dark side that had the ability to take this level of problem in stride. It was his dark side that would have laughed scornfully at the very concept of giving up just because it lost Professor Quirrell and was marooned in the depths of Azkaban and had been seen by a police officer. The ordinary Harry was not able to take that sort of thing in stride. But there wasn't any option except to keep moving forward anyway. You couldn't get any more pointless than giving up before you'd actually lost. Harry looked around. Dim gas lights lit a corridor of grey metal, whose sides and floor and ceiling were slashed in places, gouged and melted, telling anyone who cared to look that there had been battle here. Professor Quirrell could have repaired it easily enough if he'd... The sense of betrayal struck Harry with full force then.
Why? Why did he... Why?
Because he's evil, said Gryffindor and Hufflepuff quietly and sadly.
We told you so. No,
thought Harry desperately.
No, it doesn't make sense. We were going to commit the perfect crime. The aura could have been obliterated, the corridor repaired. It wasn't too late, but it would have been too late if he'd died. But Professor Quirrell was never really planning to commit the perfect crime,
said the grim voice of Slytherin.
He wanted the crime to be noticed. He wanted everyone to know that someone had killed an aura and broken Bellatrix Black out of Azkaban. He would have prepared some kind of evidence, some proof he could reveal of your involvement, to use as blackmail against you, and you would have been bound to him forever.
Harry's Patronus almost went out then.
No,
Harry thought.
Yes,
said the other three parts of him sadly.
No, it still doesn't make sense. Professor Quirrell had to know I would turn against him the instant I saw him kill an aura. That I might very well go ahead and confess to Dumbledore, hoping to plead the true fact that I was tricked. And... in terms of blackmail, does his killing an aura against my will really add all that much to breaking Bellatrix out of Azkaban, with my willing help? It would have been more cunning to keep the evidence of my involvement with the basic crime, but still pretend to be my ally for as long as he could, saving the blackmail to use only if it became necessary.
Rationalization, said Slytherin.
So, why did Professor Quirrell do it, then?
And Harry thought with a tinge of desperation, knowing, even as he thought it, that he was motivated in part by a desire to reject reality, and that wasn't how the technique was meant to be wielded.
I notice that I am confused.
There was internal silence. None of the parts of himself seemed to have anything to add to that. And Harry continued to take stock of the moderately hopeless-looking situation. Did Harry need to re-evaluate the probability that Bellatrix was evil? Not in any mission-relevant sense. It was a given that Bellatrix was currently evil. Whether she was an innocent who'd been made that way by torture and legitimacy and unspeakable rituals, or whether she'd chosen it of her own will, didn't have much bearing on the current situation. The key fact was that while Bellatrix thought Harry was the Dark Lord, she would obey him. That was one resource, then. But Bellatrix was starved and nine-tenths dead.
Oh... I feel a little better now. How strange.
Bellatrix had said that in her shattered voice after Harry's Patronus had blazed out of control.
Harry thought, and he couldn't have quite said why he thought this. It might have just been his own mind making things up, but it seemed likely that what the Dementors had taken from you long ago was lost forever. But what the Dementors had taken from you recently, the true Patronus charm might give back. Like the difference between emptying a cup and the unused cup fading away. Bellatrix, then, might have got back what she had lost in just the last week or so. Not any happy memories, those would have been eaten years ago, but whatever strength and magic had been drained from her in just the last week, she might have regained. Like the equivalent of getting a week of rest, a week to build up her magic again. Harry looked at Professor Quirrell's snake form. Maybe enough for an innovate? If awakening Professor Quirrell was, in fact, a smart thing to do. Some of the despair came back to Harry then. He couldn't trust Professor Quirrell. Couldn't trust that reviving him would be wise. Not after what had just happened. Steady, Harry thought to himself and looked at the crumpled form of the aura. Bellatrix might also be able to manage a memory charm. That could be step one, anyway. It wasn't exactly getting everyone safely out of Azkaban, and the auras would know afterward that something strange had happened. They might suspect Bellatrix's body and perform an autopsy, but it was a step. And would it be all that hard to get out of Azkaban? If they could get to the top of Azkaban quickly enough, before the aura was supposed to report back in, before anyone noticed him missing, then they could just fly out through the hole Professor Quirrell had made and get far enough away from Azkaban to activate the portkey Harry already had in his possession. Both Professor Quirrell and Harry had portkeys, and both were powerful enough to transport two humans, plus or minus a snake. As with their doubly concealed departure from Mary's room, Professor Quirrell had put enough safety margin in his plans to impress even Harry. Bellatrix could carry Professor Quirrell's snake form, which Harry dared not touch or levitate. Harry turned and strode quickly toward where Bellatrix was waiting on the stairs. He could feel his spirits reviving a little. It was starting to look like a good plan, and there was no time to waste in going about it. What to do with Professor Quirrell, or for that matter, Bellatrix, after the portkey took them to where they were supposed to hand Bellatrix over to the psychiatric healer? Well, Harry could work that out along the way. Harry would probably have to bamboozle the healer into doing something, which was going to take one hell of a bamboozling, and Harry wasn't even sure what he wanted done. But he and Bellatrix had to get moving now. The main problem, Harry saw, as he quickly ran the whole process forward in his imagination, would come when they reached the roof. Professor Quirrell had been supposed to sneak around invisibly and confund the monitors that would notice visitors in the aerial surroundings of Azkaban, causing them to see a repeating loop of scenery for a few minutes. Professor Quirrell had said that he couldn't disillusion Harry's Patronus, and if they switched off the Patronus, the Dementors would notice Bellatrix was missing and alert the auras. Harry's train of thought stumbled. There were times when, oh crap, just didn't seem to cover it. Lee's hands were sure, despite the adrenaline, as he unlocked the bars on the vanishing cabinet that linked Azkaban to a well-guarded room in the interior of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement. A one-way vanishing cabinet, of course. The wards permitted a few fast ways into Azkaban, all of them highly restricted, and no fast ways out. Lee stepped well back, pointed his wand at the cabinet, spoke the incantation. Harmonia nectar passus! And, not a second later, The door of the cabinet burst open with a bang, and into the room strode a heavy-set, square-jawed witch with greyed hair cropped close around her head. She wore no rank signs, and she wore no jewellery or other ornamentation. It was only an ordinary Aura's robes that she deemed fit to grace herself. Director Amelia Bones, head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, and said to be the only witch in the DMLE who could take Mad-Eye Moody in a fair fight. Not that either of those two were the sort to fight fairly. Lee had heard rumours that Amelia could apparate within the bounds of the DMLE, and this was the sort of thing that gave rise to rumours like that. It called in the alarm not 50 seconds ago. "Get into the air now," Amelia barked over her shoulder at the female Aura trio following behind her with police broomsticks. They must have all been crushed in there, waiting for Lee to activate the cabinet.
"I want more aerial coverage on this place, and make sure you keep up your anti-disillusionment charms."
Then her head turned toward him.
"Report, Aura Lee. Do we know how they got in yet?"
Another Aura trio holding broomsticks materialized in the vanishing cabinet and strode out after them, even as Lee began talking. They were followed by a trio of hit wizards in full battle gear. Then another trio of hit wizards. Then another broomstick team. The emaciated form that was Bellatrix Black was resting motionless on the stairs when Harry got there. Eyes closed, and when Harry asked in a cold, high whisper whether she was awake, he got no response. A brief twitch of panic was countered by the thought that Professor Quirrell had knocked her out to prevent her from hearing the Dark Lord's cringing servant suddenly turn into a hardened criminal and then an expert battle mage. Which was good, because she wouldn't have heard Harry's voice saying, "Expecto Patronum." Harry drew back the hood of the cloak, pointed his wand at Bellatrix, and whispered, as gently as he could,
"Innovate."
From the way Bellatrix's body jerked a little, Harry didn't think he'd managed to get it quite gentle enough. The sunken dark eyes opened.
"Bella, dear,"
Harry said in his cold, high voice,
"I'm afraid we've run into a bit of a problem. Have you recovered enough to do small magics?"
There was a pause, and then Bellatrix's pale head nodded.
"Very good," Harry said dryly. "I won't ask you to walk unaided, Bella dear, but I'm afraid you must walk."
He pointed his wand at her.
"Wingardium Leviosa."
Harry kept the flow of force down to something he could sustain for a while, and it was still probably lifting 2/3 of her current body weight. She was thin. Slowly, as though for the first time in years, Bellatrix Black pushed herself to her feet. Amelia strode into the dusty room, Aura Lee and his silver badger following behind her. She'd spun her time-turner the moment she'd heard the alarm and then spent a tense hour preparing her forces for entry. You couldn't loop time within Azkaban itself. Azkaban's future couldn't interact with its past, so she hadn't been able to arrive before the DMLE had gotten the message, but she should have arrived in time. Her eyes went straight to the corpse, uncloaked and looking very dead, floating beyond the viewing window.
"Where is Bellatrix Black?"
Amelia demanded, showing no fear before the creature of fear. Even her own blood froze for an instant as the corpse parted its lips and gurgled,
"Do not know."
Harry watched, now fully invisible once more, as Bellatrix slowly leaned down, took Professor Quirrell's wand, which Harry dared not touch, and slowly straightened again. Then Bellatrix pointed the wand at the snake and said, her voice precise, though it was still a whisper,
"Innovate."
The snake did not stir.
"Shall I try again, my lord?"
she whispered.
"No," Harry said. He swallowed the sick feeling.
Harry had decided to say the hell with it and try to revive Professor Quirrell after he'd realized that the Dementors had probably alerted the Aurors by now. His high, cold voice went on unperturbed.
"Do you think you're able to perform a memory charm, dear Bella?"
Bellatrix paused and then said hesitantly,
"I think so, my lord."
"Eliminate that aura's last half hour of memory,"
Harry commanded. He'd thought a bit about whether he'd wanted to provide any justification for that, what he would say if Bellatrix asked why they weren't just killing him, in which case Harry would explain that they were pretending to be a different power group and then tell her to shut up. But Bellatrix simply pointed her wand at the aura, stood silently for a time, and finally whispered,
"Obliviate."
She swayed then, but did not fall.
"Very good, my dear Bella," Harry said, and chuckled thinly. "And I'll ask you to carry that snake."
Again, the woman said nothing, demanded no explanations, didn't ask why Harry or the apparently invisible Patronus Caster couldn't do it. She only staggered to where the long snake lay, slowly bent over, picked it up, draped it over her shoulder. A tiny little part of Harry observed that it was very relaxing to have a minion that would just follow orders so unquestioningly, and even got as far as thinking that he could totally get used to having a minion like Bellatrix before that mind fraction was screamed into silence by his mortally offended remainder.
"Follow,"
the boy commanded his minion, and began to walk. It was starting to get crowded in the duty room, almost too crowded to breathe, though there was still space around Amelia herself. If needing to breathe meant that you had to crowd Director Bones, it was better not to breathe. Amelia was looking at where Aura was fiddling with Aura McCuster's mirror.
"Specialist Weinbach,"
she barked, causing the young witch to start.
"Any response from One Hand's mirror?"
"None,"
Aura said nervously.
It has to be jammed, not dead. Carefully jammed, because it didn't set off the alarms. But the line is so blank the mirror might as well be broken."
Amelia didn't let her expression change, though the part of her that was already mourning One Hand got a little sadder and a lot more angry. 7 months. It had 7 months left until his retirement after a full century of service. She remembered him as an eager young aura so very long ago, and his whole career he'd served the DMLE with perfect loyalty, at least when it came to anything really important. Someone would burn for this. The Dementor still hovered outside the window, casting its useless shadow of dread over their operations. All the creature could do was gurgle its lack of knowledge or fail to reply at all when asked questions like, "Did Bellatrix Black escape?" and "Why can't you find her?" and "How is she being hidden?" Amelia was starting to worry that the criminals were already gone when,
"We found a hole in the roof of a sea spiral!"
someone shouted from the doorway.
"Still open! Ward circumvention's still active!"
Amelia's lips peeled back in a smile, like a wolf opening its jaws to eat. Bellatrix Black was still in Azkaban. And in Azkaban, Bellatrix Black would remain forever. She took a stride toward the window, ignoring the Dementor now, and looked up at the sky above, to check with her own eyes the patrolling broomsticks. She couldn't see the whole sky from here, but she saw 10 brooms go past on a patrol pattern, and that already ought to be enough to catch anyone, though she fully meant to put every broom she could in the air. Her auras were equipped with the fastest racing broom currently on the market, the Nimbus 2000. No unsuccessful chases for her people. Amelia turned back from the window and frowned. The room was getting ridiculously crowded, and 2/3 of these people didn't need to be here. They just wanted to be close to the center of the action. If there was one thing Amelia couldn't tolerate, it was people who did what they wanted instead of what was needed.
"All right, you lot!" Amelia bellowed at them. "Stop hanging around here and start securing the top level of each spiral. That's right!"
she said to the looks of surprise.
"All three! They could tunnel through a floor or a ceiling to go between them, in case you hadn't worked that out. We're going down, level by level, until we catch them. I'll take C-Spiral. Scrimgeour, you're on B."
She paused then, remembering that Mad-Eye had retired last year. Who could she...
"Shacklebolt, you're on the A-Spiral. Take with you the strongest other fighters. Check every set of cells you pass. Look under blankets. Do the full set of detection charms in every corridor. Nobody leaves Azkaban until the criminals are caught. Nobody. And..."
People looked at Amelia in surprise as her voice trailed off. The criminals had invented some way to prevent the Dementors from finding Bellatrix Black. That ought to have been impossible. It chilled her blood, contemplating that. It was... like... Amelia took a deep breath and spoke once more, in a voice of steel command.
"And when you catch them, make bloody sure they're the real criminals and not our own people forced to take polyjuice. Anyone behaves oddly, check them for the Imperius curse. Keep each other in sight at all times. Don't assume an Aura uniform is friendly if you don't recognize the face."
She turned to the communication specialists.
"Tell the broomsticks, if one of the brooms peels off for no reason, half of them are to hunt it down while the rest keep patrolling. And change the harmonics on everything changeable. They may have stolen our keys."
Then, back to the rest of the room.
"No aura is above suspicion unless they have no family left to threaten."
She saw it. The cold looks that came over the older faces, saw some of the younger auras flinch, and knew that they understood. But she said it out loud just to be sure.
"We're fighting the old wizarding war today, everyone. Just because you know who is dead doesn't mean the Death Eaters have forgotten his tricks. Now go!"
Harry walked in silence through the gas-lit grey corridor, invisible beside Bellatrix and the silver shape following them, trying to think of a better plan. At first, when he'd realized that the auras probably knew already, and that, moreover, Professor Quirrell wasn't waking up, his thoughts had frozen up there for a second, and then stayed frozen, even as he'd gotten himself and Bellatrix heading downward to buy as much time as possible. The auras, Harry figured, would start at the top and move down, level by level. The auras could afford to move slowly and securely. They knew their prey had no way out. Harry hadn't been able to think of any way out. Until Harry had said to himself,
"Well, if it was just a war game, what would General Chaos do?"
From which an answer had flowed instantly. And then Harry had thought,
"But if it's that easy, why hasn't anyone broken out of Azkaban before?"
And after he'd realized the possible problem,
Fine. What would General Chaos do about that?
Whereupon General Chaos had come up with an amendment to his first plan. It was the most insanely Gryffindor thing Harry had ever... So, now he was trying to think of a better plan, and not having much luck.
"Picky, picky, picky," said Gryffindor. "Who was complaining about not having any plan 1 minute earlier? You should be glad we came up with anything at all, Mr. Now We're Doomed."
"My lord,"
Bellatrix whispered haltingly, as she navigated the next flight of stairs downward.
"Am I going back to my cell, my lord?"
Harry's brain was distracted, so it took him that long to process the words, and then another moment to process the horror, while Bellatrix continued speaking.
"I would, please, my lord. I would very much rather die,"
her voice said, and then, in a smaller voice, a whisper that was barely there,
"but I will go back if you ask it of me, my lord."
"We're not going back to your cell," hissed Harry's voice on automatic. Nothing of what he felt was allowed to reach his face.
Said Hufflepuff.
"Did you seriously just think you ought to work for me? I would appreciate you."
"A stone would respond to that kind of loyalty," Harry thought, "even if I'm only getting it by mistake. I can't help but... She's the Dark Lord's loyal killer and torturer, and the supposed reason she's loyal is because an innocent girl was broken into pieces and used as raw material to make her,"
said Hufflepuff.
"Did you forget? If someone shows me that much loyalty, even by mistake, there's a part of me that can't help but feel something. The Dark Lord must have been... evil doesn't seem like a strong enough word. He must have been empty to not appreciate her loyalty, artificial or not."
The better parts of Harry didn't have much to say to that. And that was when Harry heard it. It was faint, and it grew louder with every step they took. A woman's voice, distant, indistinct. His ears automatically strained to make out the words.
"Please, don't. Didn't mean. Don't die."
Then his brain knew who he was hearing, and in almost the same moment figured out what he was hearing. Because Professor Quirrell wasn't there to keep the silence anymore, and Azkaban was not, in fact, silent. Faint the woman's voice, repeating,
"No, I didn't mean it. Please don't die. No, I didn't mean it. Please don't die."
It got louder with every step Harry took. He could hear the emotion in the words now. The horror. The remorse. The desperation of...
"No, I didn't mean it. Please don't die."
The woman's worst memory, rehearsing over and over again.
"No, I didn't mean it. Please, don't die."
The murder that had sent her to Azkaban.
"No, I didn't mean it. Please, don't die."
Where she was sentenced by the Dementors to watch whoever she'd killed die and die and die in an infinite repeating loop. though she must have been put in Azkaban recently from the amount of life left in her voice. The thought came to Harry then that Professor Quirrell had passed those doors, heard those sounds, and given not the slightest sign of disturbance. And Harry would have called it a positive proof of evil, if Harry's own lips hadn't remained silent in the presence of Bellatrix, his breathing regular, while something inside him screamed and screamed and screamed. The Patronus brightened, not out of control, but it brightened with every step Harry took. It brightened further as Harry and Bellatrix descended the stairs. She stumbled, and Harry offered her his left arm, a thrust outside the cloak, braving the sense of doom from being that close to the snake draped around her neck. There was a surprised look on her face, but she accepted it and said nothing. It helped Harry, being able to help Bellatrix, but it wasn't enough. Not when he saw the huge metal door in the center of that level's corridor. Not when they came closer, and the woman's voice fell silent, because there was a Patronus near her now, and she wasn't reliving her worst memory any more.
"Good," said a voice inside him. "That was step one."
Harry's steps carried him inevitably forward toward the metal door. And,
"Now unlock the door."
Harry kept walking.
"What do you think you're doing? Go back and get her out of there."
Kept walking.
"Save her? What are you doing? She's hurting. You have to save her."
The portkey Harry was carrying could transport 2 humans. Only 2? Plus or minus a snake? If they'd had Professor Quirrell's portkey too. But they didn't. Professor Quirrell's human form was carrying that. There was no way to get it. Harry could only save 1 person today. And there was only 1 person on the lowest level of Azkaban in the most desperate need.
"Don't go!"
The voice came in a scream from behind the metal door.
"No, no, no! Don't go! Don't take it away! Don't!
There was a light in the corridor, and it grew brighter.
"Please!"
sobbed the woman's voice.
"Please! I can't remember my children's names anymore!"
"Sit down, Bella,"
Harry's voice said. Somehow he kept his voice in a cold whisper.
"I must deal with this."
The hover charm diminishing and switching off, even as Bella obediently sat down, her skeletal form dark against the brightening air.
"I'll die,"
thought Harry. The air went on brightening. After all, it wasn't a certainty that Harry would die. It was just a probability of death. And weren't some things worth a probability of dying? The air went on brightening. The greater Patronus was beginning to form around him. The brilliant human shape was becoming indistinct within the burning air as Harry's life went to feed the fire.
"If I wipe out the Dementors, then even if I live, they'll know it was me, that I was the one who did this. I'll lose my support, lose the war."
"Yeah?"
said the inner voice that was urging him on.
"After you destroy all the Dementors in Azkaban, I'd think that'd tend to prove your credentials as a Light Lord, actually. So save her! Save her! You have to save her!"
The humanoid shape could no longer be seen as a separate entity. The corridor couldn't be seen. Harry's own body was invisible within the cloak. There was only a bodiless viewpoint within an infinite expanse of silver light, Harry could feel the life leaving him, fueling the spell. Far away, he could feel the shadows of death beginning to fray.
I meant to accomplish more with my life than this. I was going to fight the Dark Lord. I was going to merge the wizarding and muggle worlds.
Lofty goals seemed very distant, very abstract, compared to one woman begging him for help. It wasn't certain that Harry would ever do anything more important than this one thing. This one thing that he could do now and here. And with what might have been his last breath, Harry thought.
There are other Dementors. Probably other Azkabans. If I'm going to do this, I should do it when I'm closer to the central pit. It will take less of my life that way, which increases the probability that I'll survive to destroy other Dementors. Even assuming this is the optimal thing to do, if there's a right time and place to do this, it isn't now and here. It isn't now and here! What?
Said the other part of him indignantly as it searched for a counter-argument that didn't exist. Slowly, the light died back down as Harry concentrated on that one indisputable fact, the one obvious truth that they weren't in the optimal place. The time couldn't be now. Slowly, the light died back down. Part of Harry's life flowed back into him. Part had been lost as radiation. But Harry had enough left to stay on his feet and keep the silver human shape bright, and when his wand arm raised and his voice whispered,
"Wingardium Leviosa!"
the magic flowed obediently out of him and helped Bellatrix to her feet. For it wasn't his magic he had expended. It had never been his magic that fueled the Patronus charm.
"I swear,"
Harry thought, breathing as regularly as he could in Bellatrix's presence, while tears streamed down his invisible cheeks.
"I swear upon my life, and my magic, and my art as a rationalist. I swear by everything I hold sacred and all my happy memories. I give my oath that someday I will end this place. Please, please, may I be forgiven."
And the two of them walked on as a murderess's voice screamed and begged someone to come back and save her. There should have been more time. There should have been a ceremony for Harry's sacrifice of that piece of himself. But Bellatrix was beside him, and so Harry just had to keep on walking without a pause, saying nothing, breathing evenly. So Harry walked on, leaving a piece of himself behind. It would dwell in this place and time forever, he knew. Even after Harry came back some day with a company of other true Patronus casters and destroyed all the Dementors here. Even if he melted the triangular building and burned the island low enough that the sea would wash over it, leaving no trace that such a place as this had ever once existed. Even then, he wouldn't get it back. The flock of luminous creatures stopped staring downward and began patrolling the metal corridor as if nothing had happened.
"Just like last time,"
the Rector Bones snapped in the direction of Aura Lee, and the young Aura replied,
"Yes, ma'am."
The Director fired off another query to see if the Dementors could now find their target, and looked unsurprised to hear a negative reply a few seconds later. Emmeline Vance was feeling torn between her loyalties. Emmeline wasn't a member of the Order of the Phoenix anymore. They had disbanded after the end of the last war, and during the war, she'd known. They'd all known that Director Crouch had quietly approved their off-the-books battle. Director Bones wasn't Crouch, but they were hunting Bellatrix Black now, who had been a Death Eater, and who was certainly being rescued by Death Eaters. Their Patronuses were behaving oddly, all the bright creatures stopping and staring off downward before they'd gone back to following their masters, and the Dementors couldn't find their target. It seemed to her that this would be an extremely good time to consult Albus Dumbledore. Should she just suggest to Director Bones that they contact Dumbledore? But if Director Bones hadn't contacted him already... Emmeline wavered for a while. Probably too long, and then finally decided. The hell with it, she thought. We're all on the same side. We need to stick together, whether Director Bones likes it or not. At a thought, her silver sparrow fluttered onto her shoulder.
Drop behind us to guard our ear,
Emmeline murmured softly, almost without moving her lips.
Wait until no one's looking directly at you, then go to Albus Dumbledore. If he's not a ready boy himself, wait until he is, and tell him this. Bellatrix Black is breaking out of Azkaban, and the Dementors cannot find her.
Chapter 56. The Stanford Prison Experiment. Constrained Optimization. Part 6. Silent. It was thankfully silent. The metal door on the next level down. Either there wasn't someone behind there, or they were hurting quietly. Maybe they were screaming, but their voice had given out already. Or they were just muttering to themselves quietly in the dark.
I'm not sure I can do this,
Harry thought, and he couldn't blame the despairing thoughts on the Dementors either. It would be better to be lower. Safer to be lower. His plan would take time to implement, and the auras were probably already working their way down. But if Harry had to pass any more of those metal doors while staying silent and keeping his breathing perfectly regular, he might go mad. If he had to leave a piece of himself behind at each one, soon there wouldn't be anything left of him. A luminous, moonlit cat leaped into existence and landed in front of Harry's Patronus. Harry almost screamed, which wouldn't have helped his image with Bellatrix.
Harry!
Said the voice of Professor McGonagall, sounding as alarmed as Harry had ever heard from her.
Where are you? Are you all right? This is my Patronus. Answer me!
With a convulsive effort, Harry cleared his mind, repurposed his throat, forced calm, swapped in a different personality like an occlumency barrier. It took a few seconds, and he hoped like hell that Professor McGonagall didn't notice a problem with that, thanks to the communications delay. Just as he hoped like hell that Patronuses didn't report on their surroundings. A young boy's innocent voice said,
I'm in Mary's place, Professor, in Diagon Alley. Going to the restroom, actually. What's wrong?
The cat leaped away, and Bellatrix began to chuckle softly. Dusty, appreciative laughter, but she cut herself off abruptly at a hiss from Harry. A moment later, the cat returned and said in Professor McGonagall's voice,
I'm coming to pick you up right now. Don't go anywhere. If you're not around the defense professor, don't go back to him. Don't say anything to anyone. I'll be there as quickly as I can.
And the bright cat blurred forward and vanished. Harry glanced down at his watch, noting down the time so that after he got everyone out of here, and Professor Quirrell anchored the time-turner again, he could go back and be in the restroom of Mary's place at the appropriate time.
You know,
said the problem-solving part of his brain,
There's a limit to how many constraints you can add to a problem before it really is impossible. You know that?
It shouldn't have mattered. And it didn't really. It didn't compare to the suffering of a single prisoner in Azkaban. And yet, Harry still found himself feeling very aware that if his plan didn't end up with him being picked up from Mary's place just like he'd never left, and the defense professor looking completely innocent of any and all wrongdoing, Professor McGonagall was going to kill him. As their team prepared to eat another bite of territory out of C-Spiral, shielding and scanning before dispelling the previous shield to their rear, Amelia was tapping her fingers on her hip and wondering if she ought to consult the obvious expert. If only he wasn't so... Amelia heard the familiar crack of fire and knew what she would see as she turned. A third of her auras were spinning around and levelling their wands on the old wizard in half-moon glasses and a long silver beard, who had appeared directly within their midst, a bright, red, golden phoenix on his shoulder.
"Hold your fire!"
Polyjuice made it easy to forge the face, but faking the phoenix travel would have been rather more difficult. The wards permitted it as one of the fast ways into Azkaban, though there were no fast ways out. The old witch and the old wizard stared at each other for a long moment. Amelia wondered, in the back of her mind, which of her auras had sent the word. There were several former members of the Order of the Phoenix with her. She tried to remember, in the back of her mind, if she'd seen Emmeline's sparrow or Andy's cat missing from the flock of bright creatures. But she knew it was futile. It might not even be any of her people, for the old meddler often knew things he had no way at all of knowing. Albus Dumbledore inclined his head to Amelia in a courteous gesture.
"I hope I am not unwelcome here," the wizard said calmly. "We are all on the same side, are we not?"
"That depends," Amelia said in a hard voice. "Are you here to help us catch criminals, or to protect them from the consequences of their actions?"
"Are you going to try to stop the killer of my brother from getting her well-deserved kiss, old meddler?" From what Amelia heard, Dumbledore had gotten smarter toward the end of the war, mostly due to Mad-Eye's non-stop nagging, but had relapsed into his foolish mercies the instant Voldemort's body was found. A dozen smaller points of white and silver reflections of the shining animals gleamed off the old wizard's half-moon glasses as he spoke.
"Even less than you would I see Bellatrix Black freed," the old wizard said. "She must not leave this prison alive, Amelia."
Before Amelia could speak again, even to express her surprised gratification, the old wizard gestured with his long black wand and a blazing silver phoenix sprang into existence, brighter, perhaps, than all the other Patronuses put together. It was the first time she'd seen that spell cast wordlessly.
"Order all your auras to cancel their Patronus charms for 10 seconds, said the old wizard. "What darkness cannot find, the light may."
Amelia snapped off the order to the communications officer, who would notify all auras through their mirrors, commanding Dumbledore's will to be done. That took a few moments, and it became a period of awful silence, none of the auras daring to speak while Amelia tried to weigh her own thoughts.
"She must not leave this prison alive."
Albus Dumbledore wouldn't turn into Bartimus Crouch without a strong reason. If he had meant to tell her why, he already would have. But it certainly wasn't a positive sign. Still, it was good to know they'd be able to work together on this one.
Now,
said a chorus of mirrors, and all the Patronus charms winked out except that blazing silver phoenix.
Is there another Patronus still present?
The old wizard said clearly to the bright creature. The bright creature dipped its head in a nod.
Can you find it?
The silver head nodded again.
Will you remember it, should it depart and come again?
A final nod from the blazing phoenix.
It is done,
Dumbledore said.
Over,
said all the mirrors a moment later, and Amelia raised her wand and began recasting her own Patronus, though it took some extra concentration, with that wolfish smile already on her face, to think of the first time Susan had kissed her cheek, instead of dwelling on the looming fate of Bellatrix Black. That other kiss was a happy thought indeed, but not quite the right kind for the Patronus charm. They hadn't even gotten to the end of that corridor before Harry's Patronus raised its hand, politely, as though in a classroom. Harry thought quickly. The question was, how to... No, that was also obvious.
It seems, Harry said in a coldly amused voice, that someone has instructed this Patronus to speak its message only to me.
He chuckled.
Well then, pardon me, dear Bella. Quietus.
At once, the silver humanoid said in Harry's own voice,
There is another Patronus which seeks this Patronus.
What?
Said Harry, and then, without pausing to think about what was happening,
Can you block it? Stop it from finding you?
The silver humanoid shook its head. No sooner did Amelia and the other Aurors finish casting their Patronus charms when the blazing silver phoenix flew off and the true red golden phoenix followed it, and the old wizard calmly strode after both of them with his long wand gripped low. The shields around their territory parted around the old wizard like water and closed behind him with hardly a ripple.
Albus!
Shouted Amelia.
What do you think you're doing?
But she already knew.
Do not follow me,
the old wizard's voice said sternly.
I can protect myself. I cannot protect others.
The curse Amelia shouted after him made even her own auras flinch.
This isn't fair. Isn't fair. Isn't fair. There's a limit to how many constraints you can add to a problem before it really is impossible.
Harry blocked off the useless thoughts, ignoring the fatigue he was feeling and forced his mind to confront the new requirements. He had to think fast, use the adrenaline on following the chains of logic quickly and without hesitation, instead of wasting it on despair. For the mission to succeed, 1. Harry would have to dispel his Patronus. 2. Bellatrix needed to be hidden from the Dementors after the Patronus was dispelled. 3. Harry needed to resist the Dementor's drain after his Patronus was dispelled.
If I solve this one,
said Harry's brain,
I want a cookie afterward. And if you make the problem any more difficult than this, I mean the slightest bit more difficult, I'm climbing out of your skull and heading for Tahiti.
Harry and his brain considered the problem. Azkaban had stood invincible for centuries, relying upon the impossibility of evading the Dementor's gaze. So, if Harry found another way to hide Bellatrix from the Dementors, it would rely on either his scientific knowledge or his realization that the Dementors were death. Harry's brain suggested that an obvious way to stop the Dementors from seeing Bellatrix was to make her stop existing, i.e., kill her. Harry congratulated his brain on thinking outside the box and told it to continue searching.
"Kill her, and then bring her back,"
came the next suggestion.
"Use Frigidaro to cool Bellatrix down to the point where her brain activity stops, then warm her up afterward using Thermos. Just like people who fall into very cold water can be successfully revived half an hour later without noticeable brain damage."
Harry considered this. Bellatrix might not survive in her debilitated state, and it might not stop death from seeing her. And it'd have trouble carrying a cold, unconscious Bellatrix very far. And Harry couldn't remember the research on which exact body temperature was supposed to be non-fatal but temporarily brain-halting. It was another good outside-the-box idea, but Harry told his brain to keep thinking of
ways to hide from death.
A frown moved over Harry's face. He'd heard something about that somewhere.
"One of the requisites for becoming a powerful wizard is an excellent memory," Professor Quirrell had said. "The key to a puzzle is often something you read 20 years ago in an old scroll, or a peculiar ring you saw on the finger of a man you met only once."
Harry focused as hard as he could, but he couldn't remember. It was on the tip of his tongue, but he couldn't remember. So, he told his subconscious to go on trying to recollect it, and refocused his attention on the other half of the problem.
"How can I protect myself from the Dementors without a Patronus charm?"
The headmaster had been repeatedly exposed to a Dementor from a few steps away, over and over throughout a whole day, and had come out of it looking merely tired. How had the headmaster done that? Could Harry do it too? It could just be some random genetic thing, in which case Harry was screwed. But, assuming the problem was solvable, then the obvious answer was that Dumbledore wasn't afraid of death. Dumbledore really wasn't afraid of death. Dumbledore honestly, truly believed that death was the next great adventure. Believed it in his core, not just as convenient words used to suppress cognitive dissonance, not just pretending to be wise. Dumbledore had decided that death was the natural and normative order, and whatever tiny, lingering fear was still in him, it had taken a long time and repeated exposures for the Dementor to drain him through that small floor. That avenue was closed to Harry. And then Harry thought of the flip side, the obvious inverse question.
"Why am I so much more vulnerable than average? Other students didn't fall over when they faced the Dementor."
Harry meant to destroy death, to end it, if he could. He meant to live forever, if he could. He had hope of it. The thought of death brought him no sense of despair or inevitability. He was not blindly attached to his own life. Indeed, it had taken an effort not to burn away all his life on the need to protect others from death. Why did the shadows of death have such power over Harry? He would not have thought himself so afraid. Was it Harry, all along, who had been rationalizing, who was secretly so afraid of death that it was twisting his own thoughts, as Harry had accused Dumbledore. Harry considered this, preventing himself from flinching away. It felt uncomfortable, But uncomfortable thoughts weren't always true, and this one didn't sound exactly right. Like there was a grain of truth, but it wasn't hiding where the hypothesis said it was. And that was when Harry realized.
Oh, I understand now. The one who is afraid is...
Harry asked his dark side what it thought of death. And Harry's Patronus wavered, dimmed, almost went out upon the instant for that desperate sobbing, screaming terror, an unutterable fear that would do anything not to die, throw everything aside not to die, that couldn't think straight or feel straight in the presence of that absolute horror, that couldn't look into the abyss of non-existence any more than it could have stared straight into the sun. A blind, terrified thing that only wanted to find a dark corner and hide and not have to think about it any more. The silver figure had darkened to moonlight, was flickering like a failing candle.
"It's all right," thought Harry. "It's all right."
Visualizing himself cradling his dark side like a frightened child in his arms.
"It's right and proper to be horrified, because death is horrible. You don't have to hide your horror. You don't have to feel ashamed of it. You can wear it as a badge of honor, openly, in the sun."
It was strange to feel himself split in two like this. The track of his thoughts that gave the comfort, the track of his thoughts that followed his dark side's incomprehension at the alienness of the ordinary Harry's thoughts. Of all the things that his dark side associated with its own fear of death, the one thing it had never expected or imagined that it might find was acceptance and praise and help.
"You don't have to fight alone," Harry said silently to his dark side. "The rest of me will back you up on this. I won't let myself die, and I won't let my friends die either. Not you, I, not Hermione, not Mum or Dad, not Neville or Draco or anyone. This is the will to protect."
Visualizing wings of sunlight, like the wings of the Patronus he had spread, to give shelter to that frightened child. The Patronus brightened again. The world spun around Harry, or was it his own mind that was spinning?
"Take my hand,"
Harry thought and visualized.
"Come with me, and we'll do this thing together."
There was a lurch in Harry's mind, like his brain had taken one step to the left, or the universe had taken one step to the right. And, in a barely lit corridor in Azkaban, the dim gaslights far outshone by the steady and unwavering light of a human-shaped Patronus, an invisible boy stood with a strange small smile on his face, shaking only slightly. Harry knew, somehow, that he'd just done something significant, something that went beyond just strengthening his resistance to Dementors. And more than that, he'd remembered. Thinking of death as an anthropomorphic figure had done the trick, ironically enough. Now Harry could remember it. What was reputed to hide someone from the gaze of death himself?
In a corridor of Azkaban, a wizard's striding legs came to an abrupt halt, for the bright silver thing that was his guide had halted in midair, fluttering its wings in distress. The brilliant white phoenix craned its head, looking backward and forward as though confused, and then it turned to its master and shook its head in apology. Without another word, the old wizard turned and strode back the way he came. Harry stood straight and upright, feeling the fear wash over him and around him. Some tiny part of him might have been eroded a little by the waves of emptiness that broke continually upon his unmoving stone, but his limbs were not cold, and his magic was with him. In time, those waves might corrode him and consume him, sneaking through whatever tiny part of him still cowered before death, instead of using its fear to energize itself for battle. But that doom would take time, with the shadows of death far away and uncaring of him. The flaw, the crack, the fault line that was in him had been repaired, and the stars blazed brightly in his mind, vast and unafraid and brilliant in the midst of cold and darkness. To anyone else's eyes, it would have seemed that the boy stood alone in the dimly lit metal corridor, wearing that strange smile. For Bellatrix Black and the snake draped around her shoulders were concealed by the Cloak of Invisibility, one of the three Deathly Hallows, and reputed to hide its wearer from the gaze of Death himself, the riddle whose answer had been lost, and which Harry had found anew. And Harry knew now that the concealment of the cloak was more than the mere transparency of disillusionment, that the cloak kept you hidden, and not just invisible, as unseeable as were thestrals to the unknowing. And Harry also knew that it was thestral blood which painted the symbol of the Deathly Hallows on the inside of the cloak, binding into the cloak that portion of Death's power, enabling the cloak to confront the Dementors on their own level and block them. It had felt like guessing, and yet a certain guess, the knowledge coming to him in the instant of solving the riddle. Bellatrix was still transparent within the cloak, but to Harry she was no longer hidden. He knew that she was there, as obvious to him as a thestral. For Harry had only loaned his cloak, not given it, and he had comprehended and mastered the Deathly Hallow that had been passed down through the Potter line. Harry gazed directly at the invisible woman and said,
"Can the Dementors reach you, Bella?"
"No,"
said the woman in a soft, wandering voice. Then,
"But, my lord, you..."
"If you say anything foolish, it will annoy me," Harry said coldly. "Or are you under the impression that I would sacrifice myself for you?"
"No, my lord,"
the Dark Lord's servant replied, sounding puzzled, and perhaps awed.
"Follow," spoke Harry's cold whisper.
And they continued their journey downward as the Dark Lord reached into his pouch and took a cookie and ate it. If Bellatrix had asked, Harry would have claimed it was for the chocolate. But she didn't ask. The old wizard strode back into the midst of the auras, the silver and the red golden phoenixes now following behind.
"You!"
Amelia began to bellow.
"They have dismissed their Patronus," said Dumbledore.
The old wizard didn't seem to raise his voice, but his calm words somehow overrode her own.
I cannot find them now.
Amelia gritted her teeth and put a number of scathing remarks on hold and turned to the communications officer.
Tell the duty room to ask the Dementors again if they can sense Bellatrix Black.
The communications specialist spoke to her mirror for a moment, and a few seconds later looked up, surprised.
No.
Amelia was already cursing violently in her mind.
But they can see someone else on the lower levels who isn't a prisoner.
Fine, snapped Amelia. Tell the Dementor that a dozen of its kind are authorized to enter Azkaban and seize whoever that is and anyone in their company. And if they see Bellatrix Black, they're to kiss her immediately.
Amelia turned and glared toward Dumbledore then, daring him to argue, but the old wizard only looked at her a bit sadly and held his peace. Aura McCuster finished speaking to the corpse that drifted outside the window, conveying the director's orders. The corpse gave him a deathly smile that almost unstrung his limbs and then floated downward. Soon after, a dozen Dementors arose from where they had drifted in the central pit of Azkaban and headed outward toward the walls of the vast metal structure that towered above them. Entering through holes set into the base of Azkaban, the darkest of all creatures began their march of horror. Chapter 57. The Stanford Prison Experiment, Constrained Contagion, Part 7. Harry had hoped that he'd just fused with his mysterious dark side and would be able to draw on all of its benefits with none of the drawbacks, call up the crystal clarity and indomitable will on demand without needing to go cold or angry. Once again, he had overestimated how much progress he'd made. Something had happened, but Harry still had a mysterious dark side. It was still separate from him, and his ordinary self was still domitable. And, despite the repair work he'd done on his dark side's fear of death, he didn't dare go dark while unshielded in Azkaban. That was tempting fate way too much. Which was unfortunate, because a bit of non-domitability would have sure come in handy about now. What made it harder was that he couldn't slump against a wall, couldn't break into tears, couldn't even heave a sigh. His dear Bella was watching him, and that wasn't the sort of thing her dark lord would do.
My lord?
Bellatrix said. Her low voice was strained.
The Dementors, they are coming. I can feel them, my lord.
Thank you, Bella, said a dry voice. I already know that.
Harry could sense the holes in the world, the same way as when he'd been wearing the Deathly Hallow, but he could feel the empty pull increasing in intensity. At first, he'd mistaken it for the result of descending a stairwell until he and Bellatrix had finished descending and the pull had gone on increasing. Then, decreased as the Dementors moved away along the spiral, then increased as they went up another flight of stairs. There were Dementors within Azkaban itself now, and they were coming for him. Of course they were. Harry might be resistant now, but he was not hidden.
New requirement, Harry told his brain. Find a way of defeating Dementors that doesn't invoke my Patronus charm. Alternatively, find yet another way of hiding someone from Dementors besides the Cloak of Invisibility.
I quit, said his brain.
Find yourself another piece of computing substrate to solve your ridiculously overconstrained problems.
I mean it, thought Harry.
So do I, said his brain. Put up your Patronus charm and wait for the auras to find you. Be sensible. It's over. Give up.
The sucking emptiness seemed to pull harder as he thought it, and Harry realized what was happening, concentrated more intensely on the stars, turned his mind away from the despair.
You know, observed the logical side of him, if you're not allowed to think any negative thought, because that will open your mind to the Dementors, that's a cognitive bias too. How would you know if it actually was time to give up?
A desperate, sobbing scream rose up from below. Words mixed in like,
No!
And,
Away!
The prisoners knew. The prisoners could feel it. The Dementors were coming.
My lord, you should not risk yourself for me. Take back your cloak.
Be silent, fool, hissed an angry voice. When I decide to sacrifice you, I will tell you so. She's got a valid point, said Slytherin. You shouldn't risk yourself for her. There's no way her life is as valuable as yours.
For an instant, Harry considered sacrificing Bellatrix to save himself. And in that moment, some of the dim, orange gaslight seemed to flee the corridor. A touch of cold crept over Harry's fingertips, and he knew then that to think of leaving Bellatrix to the shadows of death would make him vulnerable once more. Even in the moment of making the decision, he might become unable to cast the Patronus charm, for he would have given up the thought that had saved him before. It occurred to Harry that he could still take the cloak from Bellatrix afterward, even if he couldn't cast the Patronus charm, and then he had to wrench his thoughts away from that option, focus firmly on his decision not to do it, or he might have just fallen over where he stood, for the whirlpool of emptiness swirling around him was now deadly strong. There were screams coming from above, and the screams below had stopped.
"This is ridiculous," said his logical side. "Rational agents shouldn't have to put up with this sort of censored reasoning process. All the theorems assume that how you think doesn't affect reality apart from your actual actions, which is why you're free to choose an optimal algorithm without worrying about how your thoughts interact with Dementors. That is a really dumb idea," said Gryffindor. "Even I think it's a dumb idea, and I'm your Gryffindor side. You're not seriously gonna just stand there and..."
"We have a fix,"
shouted Aura, holding up her magic mirror as though in triumph.
"The Dementor outside the inner wall pointed to level 7, C-spiral. That's where they are."
Her auras were looking at her expectantly.
"No,"
Amelia said in a level voice.
"That's where one of them is. The Dementors still can't find Bellatrix Black. We're not running down there and letting her through in the confusion, and we're not dividing our forces to be ambushed. So long as we move with caution, we can't lose. Tell Scrimgeour and Shacklebolts to keep going down level by level, same as before."
The old wizard was already striding forward. Amelia didn't even bother cursing him this time, as once again their carefully constructed shields parted like water and rippled gently in his wake. Harry waited at the beginning of the corridor, just next to the stairs leading upward. Bellatrix and the snake were behind him, concealed by the deathly hallow that Harry had mastered. He knew, though he could not see, that the emaciated sorceress was sitting upon the stairs, slumped back since Harry had withdrawn his hover charm to free up his mind and magic. Harry's eyes were fixed on the far end of the corridor, next to the stairs that led downward. Not in his mind now, but in true reality, the light in the corridor had dimmed. The temperature had fallen. The fear thundered over him and around him like a sea whipped by hurricane winds, and the sucking emptiness had become a howling draw toward some approaching black hole. Up the stairs at the far end, floating smoothly through the dying air, came the voids, the absences, the wounds in the world. And Harry expected them to stop. With all the will and focus he could muster, Harry expected them to stop, anticipated their stopping, believed they would stop. That was the idea, anyway. Harry shut down the dangerous stray thought and expected the Dementors to halt. They had no intelligence of their own. They were just wounds in the world. Their form and structure was borrowed from others' expectations. People had been able to negotiate with them, offer them victims in exchange for cooperation, only because they believed Dementors would bargain. So, if Harry believed hard enough that the voids would turn and go, they would turn and go. But the wounds in the world kept coming. The swirling fear seemed like a solid thing now. The emptiness tearing at matter as well as mind, substance as well as spirit. You could see the metal beginning to tarnish as the holes in the world passed. A small sound came from behind him, from Bellatrix, but she said no word, for she had been instructed to remain silent.
"Don't think of them as creatures. Think of them as psychosensitive objects. They can be controlled if I can control myself."
The problem was that he couldn't control himself so easily, couldn't make himself believe blue was green by an act of will, couldn't suppress all those thoughts about how irrational it was to make yourself believe something, how impossible it was to trick yourself into believing something if you knew that was what you were doing. All the training Harry had given himself against self-deception was refusing to switch off, no matter how harmful it was in this unique, special case. The shadows of death crossed the halfway point of the corridor, and Harry held up his hand, fingers spread, and said in a voice of firm and confident command, "Stop!" The shadows of death stopped. Behind Harry, Bellatrix gave a strangled gasp, like it was being torn out of her. Harry gestured to her, the signal he had set up in advance, which meant, "Repeat what you heard the Dementors say."
"They say,"
Bellatrix said, her voice was shaking,
"they said Bellatrix Black was promised to us. Tell us where she hides, and you will be spared.
Bellatrix, Harry said, making his voice sound amused. She escaped a while ago. A moment later, Harry realized that he should have said that Bellatrix was among the auras in the top level. That would have caused more confusion. No, it was wrong to think of the Dementors as trickable. They were merely things. They were controlled only by expectations.
They say,
Bellatrix said in a cracked voice,
they say they know you're lying.
The voids began to move forward again.
Her anticipations are more solidly believed than mine. She's controlling them unwittingly.
Don't resist,
Harry said, pointing his wand behind him.
I love you. Farewell, my lord.
Somnium.
It had helped, strangely enough, hearing those particular awful words. Understanding Bellatrix's mistake, it reminded Harry why he was fighting.
Stop!
Harry said again. Bellatrix was asleep. Now only his own will, his own expectations, rather, should control those spheres of annihilation. But they kept on gliding forward, and Harry couldn't stop himself from worrying that the previous experience had damaged his confidence, which meant that he wouldn't be able to stop them, and as he noticed himself thinking that, he doubted even more.